Thank you, Ruth. And as you just said, this publication exemplifies the active program of technical cooperation and dialogue between our three organizations. Let me begin by retracting some of the steps that led us to today's publication. The landmark date, as far as WTO is concerned, is 01, when Trade Minister did something entirely unprecedented. The dimension had become clear of the catastrophic impact at the time of HIV/AIDS, which was ravaging the world's poorest populations. Then WTO ministers, trade ministers, turned to this question of public health, interaction with IP, and they then produced the Doha Declaration on the TRIPS Agreement and public health. That was a major turning point. Why? Simply because neither public health or even the area of IP had been among traditional preoccupations or core competence of trade ministers. They, of course, had focused their attention on traditional issues like tariffs or trade-distorting subsidies. Now, this logic of the TRIPS Health Doha Declaration remains compelling today. At the time, ministers recognized that the IP system is not an isolated specialist domain, nor yet a monolithic barrier to public health. Instead, they saw intellectual property as an element of this complex set of policy tools which we require to solve global problems. And the emphasis was laid on how different policy measures work together coherently and to mutual benefits, this sort of intersection which Rust just mentioned, which is the title of this report. A sort of coherence exercise which started at the time and which I think we will help fostering with this publication. I won't expand more on the follow-up of this Doha Declaration, except to reinforce that since then, this notion that coherence between these various aspects has to be promoted, including in areas which are trade-related, such as competition policy, procurement strategies, attention to tariffs and other drivers of cost, and, of course, choices within the IP system. What we all know, and I think share, is that innovation and access must be seen holistically. Innovation without effective access has little meaning for health benefits, or on the other side, simply leveraging access to existing pharmacopoeia without encouraging the development of new molecules, new medicines, would also have little impact on real concrete health outcomes. As could be expected, the study points out the importance of the patent system for the pharmaceutical sector. Nothing of scoop news on this, while also identifying alternative incentive mechanisms that seek to enable much-needed new products, and particularly in neglected diseases. We also look at measures such as differential pricing as a practical way of reconciling innovation and access. we try to draw together in as brief and accessible possible manner this diverse array of current information on access and innovation, and enabling a sort of overview on how diverse policy measures can fit together coherently. Of course, on the trade side, we re-look once more at classical obstacles such as tariffs, which obviously remain high in some countries with direct implications for access. Tariffs, taxes, various other charges on pharmaceutical or other health-related products are a sort of tax on health. True, trade in health-related products has been for a long time dominated by a few developed countries, but I think the study shows that this world has changed, and that what we've seen in other areas of the international economy has also become true in this sector, with the growing presence of some emerging countries. We also, as could be expected, look at preferential trade agreements and try to balance both their costs and benefits in terms of significance for access to and innovation in medical technologies. We obviously conclude that this is a very complex field and that we still need to dig deeper into this interrelationship between multilateral standards and bilateral standards. Of course, public procurement, as I said, is one dimension of further accessibility, which has to do, as per what our plurilateral common procurement in WTO entails, sort of legitimate competition, transparency, according to the general principles of our GPA agreement. We also, of course, show how combining these three approaches can increase efficiency, use of TRIPS flexibilities, and that's a core WIPO issue, information on disease burdens, medicines, prices, patents, that's a core WHO issues, and including on an issue which we were discussing just before this meeting, which is the formidable potential, largely unexploited, yes, yet in our view, of playing on economies of scale in streamlining, harmonizing, mutually recognizing administrative legitimate processes which are required for registration, certification, testing of medicines or medical technologies in your countries. One of the big challenges in working on this was not the amount of material information. We got lots of that. The question was to select on this huge amount of data and information, what do we need to be sort of empirically more significant. Now, usual caveat for our member-driven organizations, and Margaret, Francis and myself have uncles which oversee very closely what we do, what we say. So let me be absolutely politically correct. The function of this study is not to pronounce the final or authoritative word on the issues it addresses. This is not a policy prescription. We do not step into our members' capacity to do that is just a way to help them moving in this direction in providing what we believe is a stronger shared platform of objective information to build the capacity of policymakers and to serve as the basis for their informed policy decisions. This is not our policy prescription, a fortiori not our policy decision. This is for the members to digest, but I think if you accept that this is not a doctrinal exercise, but a practical resource for more informed policy reflection and decision at your level, we will have hit our target. And the obvious sort of intertwining of the approach, the sort of cross-disciplinary dialogue which this necessitates, is, I think, further evidence in the richness of what we can weave together. So, to conclude, as far as I am concerned, this study is one of the many bridges WTO has constructed with other international organizations during my tenure. The starting point was very simple, and a number of NGOs at the time were quite instrumental in convincing us that we had a problem in the WTO being seen as a sort of island in isolation somewhere in the vast sea of the international system. And this took us to thinking, reflecting, and reacting with this simple view which all WTO members share, which is that opening trade is not an objective in itself. It is good for one simple reason, which is that it serves the purpose of enhancing welfare. Now, not everybody, every time, every latitude, every longitude. There are a number of conditions for this to work, but this is the sort of ideological cement of WTO members, which is why we've also, during these years, worked with the ILO on trade and jobs, with UNEP on trade and environment, this time with both WHO and WIPO on these health-related issues, and why so for, I think, what remains a very strong rationale, which is that jobs, health, or the environment are issues people across the world care about, which is why it is so essential for us. And I think we have to keep trying to make a better job of showing how these distant international bodies have, if they work together, a potential influence on increasing people's welfare on the ground. That's the wish we all have. Now, whether we've succeeded in putting this work together, and again, it took us quite a long time together to gather all this, whether we've succeeded or not is now up for you to judge. And we, of course, wish and are open to any kind of dialogue that this material, which is now on the table, could trigger. Thanks for your attention.